Please pray with me. On this beautiful day, O God, on this first Sunday of Advent, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, for you are our rock and our Redeemer, the one who is coming and indeed who has already come to those who open their hearts to you. Amen.
Amen.
So the Thanksgiving feast has just settled in, and we can all hear the children and the child within us asking, so when's Christmas? Our society's sense of time does support that impatience with those 4 a.m. Black Friday store openings and Christmas jingles in the air before Thanksgiving. We are ready for the end of the season right now. We want those gifts right now. But we cannot reach the end of the story until, or maybe perhaps the beginning of a new story, until we've reached or gone through the middle of the story. Theologically speaking, as we begin this season of Advent, we enter into another iteration of the great cycle of time. Once again, we make our way toward the side of the Christ child. Once again, we have the promise of a new start, a new beginning, the hope of a better and deeper and more meaningful life as we encounter the journey toward the Christmas feast. We too, as adults, may enter into that heightened anticipation. That's where our kids get it, no doubt, somehow. As we mark off the list of things that have to be done before friends and family come or before we leave to be with them, as we decorate, as we buy presents, as we buy food, as we prepare it, as we get ready for the great day itself. And of course, we dare not forget the double-edged nature of the season. For many, it may also be time of sadness and shadow, which sharpens their sense of separation from the apparently happy people all around them in the inevitable recorded songs broadcast wherever they go. Illness, trauma, loss or coming loss, regret, and the memories of what used to be and is no more, loved ones no longer alive, a childhood home that now belongs to some other family, traditions gone the way of the people and relationships that sustain them. For many who do not have enough to eat or protection from the elements, or protection from those who would harass and persecute them, the season remains either unknown, or its power is greatly diminished, or in fact disappears. I think this shadow side gives us an idea of where apocalyptic literature, for example, in Luke, that was just read to us, came from. It was out of the struggle of the ancient Hebrews against foreign occupation and the resulting loss of culture and tradition and hope, that the strain of theological thought that we call apocalyptic was born. The hope needed for living in the present was derived from the belief of God's ultimate and righteous judgment against the wicked, the uncaring overseer, the unjust judge, the oppressive king. And that judgment, according to the vividly written and highly symbolic literature that speak of it, would come in a vivid, dramatic, violent way, catching the unaware by surprise, wreaking vengeance upon the ungodly, cleansing the earth of the enemy, the oppressor, hunger, famine, warfare, disease, poverty, death. In this new world, there will be room for the chosen ones, the righteous, to live in God's renewed and perfected creation in harmony with the earth, with the Lord, and with the neighbor, and with the Lord who had come as Messiah, as Christ. Think about movies such as Apocalypse Now, or the brand new one, 2012, or H.G. Wells' film, The War of the Worlds, or any movie whose premise was the ending of everything or the deeply changing nature of what would come upon the earth and its inhabitants? Think about the fear that computers would not be able to operate at the turn of a millennium. Y2K, remember that? That had an apocalyptic tone to it. The end is coming, oh my God, what are we going to do? 9/11 had that tone as an apocalypse, especially to the American sense of what we were, who we were, that we were protected, that we were special, that we were above the rules that governed everybody else. Books tell us about the Black Death, or the Great Plague, as it was called in the 13th century, 14th century, as it ravaged Europe and Asia, killing one-third to one-half of the population. Indeed, it seemed to be the beginning of the end. As the year 1000 approached, many expected the world to end. Every millennium, that happens. Sayings from the 1950s, remember this? The Russians are coming. Movements such as the Jehovah's Witnesses, Seventh-day Adventists, many other millennialist apocalyptic movements for hundreds of years. They've tried to fix the date of the end of the world and talk about what that new world would be like and what it would be like to get there, where only the chosen still existed. I think this is just part of our human nature to have a wake-up call. By using hyperbole, by using exaggeration, because we fall asleep far too easily to our part in the harm that human beings cause one another. We need motivation to live differently than we have before, and fear and anxiety are great motivators, at least for a while, because they also twist who we are and bring disease into this newness. We need motivation. There's an ethic, there's a purpose rooted in the very fabric of creation, and we violate it to our harm, and we keep it to our benefit. And we need to be reminded about that. The universe itself, I think, finds a ways to nudge us awake or to slap us awake, to present patterns of behavior that may lead to disaster. In the present time, we have the environmental movement telling us that global warming presages an almost incomprehensible change in life as we know it. Such prophetic warnings based in science and statistics may indeed come true. Just as many people warn the world using science and statistics, warn the world about the rise of German militarism before World War II. And many people did not believe it. Similar warnings served to rein in our worst excesses during the nuclear-tipped Cold War in the 50s and 60s. But when we go to the holy texts, we understand that there is a danger in taking them too literally. They point toward an ending, a judgment, a monumental disaster, because they were written in that hyperbolic, symbolic style. The movements arising from such literalism have been, at their worst, manipulative, destructive, and the fear awakened by them has often given rise to violence against minority groups who are made to be scapegoats. If we just get rid of them, whoever them is, we'll return to normal. But let's face it, Jesus used very strong language, very vivid images that spoke strongly and loudly to his listeners. In fact, rereading this, his words, I cannot see him reading it calmly, you know, just like, oh, by the way, there will be signs in the sun and moon and stars. There was a power in his voice, I am sure, that woke people up, that grabbed their attention. And they imagine some of them said, why are you shouting? He's saying, pay attention. Pay attention to the signs of danger in the larger spiritual and political world and within your own internal world. Stay alert to what is going on out there and inside here. Be aware of distress and confusion on a massive scale. Do what you can to mitigate it, but don't Let that external chaos take over your internal life and make you part of the problem. It is inevitable that trouble and evil happens. It's inevitable that chaos happens, but he was saying, do not lose hope. Do not lose the ability to think rationally and to pray with intention and to love neighbor and God with full awareness. Do not let your emotional state control you, take you off course. Instead, have courage because of the universal and personal care and love of the Lord for all and you. In the midst of trouble, the Lord continues to be present and active within you, between you and your neighbor, friend or foe, and beyond you into networks of relationships you have no way of contacting. Trouble will come to all in different ways, Jesus was saying, including yourself and those whom you love, and those whom you do not love. But do not let that trouble be part of what takes root in you and makes you part of the problem. The Lord is our rock and our Redeemer in the most joyful of times, and also in the most difficult of times. In which direction was Jesus pointing? If you and I believe that our purpose in life is that of becoming fully human in the image of the Lord, then time itself is full of opportunities to love the Lord our God with all that we are and all that we have, to love our neighbor as ourselves with all the wisdom we possess in every moment, in every place. That may include very personal one-on-one interactions, as well as participation in small groups, as well as participation in mass movements. If the Lord's purpose is to create heaven on earth through the intentions and words and actions of ordinary human beings, then truly we have been given a great and holy task. It is an impossible task for us if all we rely upon is our own stores of love and truth. And in reality, we can only begin to approach that reality when we allow the sunlight of God's love to begin to permeate the inner being of our individual selves and the inner being of this group or any group that calls itself spiritual, that calls itself a community of faith. Swedenborg wrote, "The Lord's presence is perpetual with everyone, but his advent, his coming, is only with those who receive him, who are they who believe in him and do his commandments. Indeed, our part is in the movement of the holy in everyday life is to open ourselves up to the reality of the Lord and his purposes for each one of us and all of us. He must come into our innermost thoughts, those hidden shadowy places that we do not admit that we have, our feelings, not just into our public surface self. The goal is that our public self gradually becomes congruent with our inner self, with our deepest, truest, redeemed inner self. That process is marked by chaos, by confusion, by uncertainty, because a new way of being cannot happen until what is imperfect and harmful and even evil is shown for what it is. In that upset, we engage in the difficult journey of reconstructing our lives so that they begin to conform with the Lord's truth. This is uncomfortable. It is painful. Because what used to work for us no longer works. What used to be normal for us becomes intolerable. And out of this kind of process on a larger historical scale have come social movements. which were born to bring an end to slavery, a new status to women, a more complete justice to racial minorities, a more humane life for workers, and most recently, a more complete understanding of the complexities of this world in which we live. Now, each part of the system affects the other. So I think we can refer to a gradual advent of the Lord's truth into the world. Or perhaps, I wonder, maybe it's a gradual growth of our human comprehension of the Lord's eternal truths and of our willingness to live into those truths. Swedenborg wrote, "The perpetual presence of the Lord causes one to become rational and to have the ability to become spiritual. One becomes spiritual by the light proceeding from the Lord as a sun, which one receives in the understanding. But the advent of the Lord is with those who can join heat to that light. Pay attention. Wake up. What is being shown to us as individuals that we had not seen before, that we hadn't been able to understand, or were not willing to act upon before this time? What is being shown to this community of faith and other communities of faith that we and they were not able to understand or not willing to act upon prior to this time? Again, from True Christian Religion, "The mere presence of the Lord and consequent enlightenment of the understanding may be compared to the presence of the solar light in the world, while the advent of the Lord may be compared to the advent of heat in the springtime." May we be apocalyptic Christians in the sense not of using hyperbole, exaggeration, to foment fear and anxiety. We don't want to act out of those. But we need to speak the truth with love and wisdom to those around us. Sometimes we need just a friendly nudge. Other times, something heavier. May we, during this Advent, live more deeply into a way of cooperating with the Lord in the formation of a new heaven and earth, no matter how far short we fall, and we will, of its completeness, of its wholeness. May it be so. Amen.